And he talks about the main question is a question of authority of principles. So why should we give to it a enormous respect that indeed we give it? Ultimately, any two kinds of answers are possible. And he says the source is either this. It's either absolute moral authority is either personal or it is impersonal. And so from here, we're going to figure out whether the source of moral authority can be derived from the universe or if it has another source in and of itself.
And so he begins, we'll start in where he said, where he, you know, after he's made this distinction, he says, consider the first, the latter possibility, right? That source of morality is impersonal. That would mean that there is some impersonal structure or law in the universe that sets forth ethical precepts and rightly demands allegiance to them, right? If morality comes from an impersonal source. But then he asks the question, what kind of impersonal being could possibly do that? Certainly, if the laws of the universe reduced to chance, nothing of ethical significance could emerge from it, right?
Right.
I mean, what of ethical significance could we learn from, he tells us, random, you know, collisions of subatomic particles? Right? What loyalty would we owe to pure chance, right? How can an impersonal structure create obligation, right?
Right.
And he says, actually, what this really does is gets us right back into the is-ought problem, right?
Right.
We have
right.
something that is an impersonal structure, and we're attempting to get an ought from it. And so impersonal doesn't seem to work in terms of the source of morality. That's what he's giving.
Right. We can set our clocks by the vibration of the cesium atom, and it's really, really good. But it doesn't tell us if we should be late for our kids' school play that we might not want to go to. So the is ought is honed in right there. The fact is that an impersonal principle is insufficient to create an ought, something that we must do or should do to rightly demand loyalty and obedience. Why should I listen to the vibration of a cesium atom? And it just sits there and vibrates, and I look at my watch, but I don't do anything. There's nothing that forces me to then be on time. When then does the ought come from? What is there that is capable of imposing an absolute obligation on human beings? Well, for this answer, we'll leave the realm of the impersonal principle and turn to the realm of persons. Obligations and loyalties arise in the context of interpersonal relationships. I have an obligation to go to my child's school play. And once you have young children, you actually like those cheesy productions and it's very cute. And you end up going, aw, with everybody else. And
that's right.
And as a dad, that's why cell phones were invented. It was created by a dad so that we would have an easier way of not getting in the way of other dads taking videos of it, because we all take videos of those. but the relationship aspect is what creates the ought. I tell you that I'm going to purchase a house from you for $10,000, be either a bad house or I'm taking advantage of you. You say, I agree to that. And we have an exchange. If one side doesn't fulfill their obligation, then it's an unethical point of view. And so that interpersonal relationship is what drives that ought. I ought to do this thing because this other person is involved.
Exactly. In fact, his example is,
right.
For instance, I receive a bill from a man who has repaired my roof, right? And I feel an obligation to pay it. When we agreed that, you know, that he would fix the roof, I promised to pay him. Well, that promise, he tells us, creates an obligation. And I would have little respect for myself, he says, if I did not keep that promise. Also, we learn morality typically in the family. And so this is another deeply personal, what he calls covenantal environment.
Right.
So this relational covenantal type of environment is part of personal relationships. And that's the source, something that's personal relationship. Mm-hmm. He's arguing is the source of morale.
Right. Right. We wouldn't get very far if we told our neighbors, yeah, I'd pay the guy that did a really good job on my roof. But, you know, that just doesn't comport with my morality. Your neighbors are not gonna. Your neighbors aren't gonna say, "Well, you know, what's true for him isn't always true for us." So, all right. Our obligations to the repairman and even to parents are not absolute. If the repairman's bill is 10 times his estimate, a higher moral arbiter, the court, might have to be involved. If parents tell a son to murder somebody, it is best that he resort to a higher moral authorities, perhaps to his absolute or ultimate moral authority, because we talked about moral agents our moral standards, our ethical standards are hierarchical. And so, you know, we might put, you know, it's not right to cross the street not in the crosswalk. But I also can do it if a child is in the way and I can go when the light is the red stop sign. And I rescue that child from impending doom. I can't. It would be wrong for me to say, well, you know, all ethical standards are alike, and so I can't jaywalk. But where does this authority come from? Where is this ultimate standard or moral authority derived from? And something that it appears that we all have or right. view, because the reasons that we apply a moral statement and has risen to prominent here in discussion is because so much of our day-to-day activities are moral things, and he's presented that fact as well. But when we're even talking in day-to-day life, the if you turn on the news and even the people you disagree with are making moral claims and moral authorities, but not everyone out there, especially in the press, are God-fearing people. And so where does this obligation to each other come from if everything's just, well, you know, you do what you do and I do what I do? No, there is this covenantal aspect to it. But where does it come from?